So recently I'm looking to buy a car, and I thought to myself, there's got to be a better way. I mean, that old game of cat and mouse at the dealership, going to the manager, coming back, it's so stressful. I'm breaking out in hives. Not a pretty sight. But then my friend told me about a new way to buy a car. It's called TrueCar.com. At TrueCar.com, you can actually see what others paid for the car you're looking for in your area, so you know when you're getting a great price. Because at TrueCar.com, you get a savings certificate. And you just take that savings certificate to the TrueCar certified dealer on the certificate, so you don't need to worry about the hassle and anxiety of the old way to buy a car. And TrueCar users save an average of $3,000 off the sticker price. $3,000. Imagine what you can do with that. A little vacation would be nice, right? So seriously, if you're ready to buy a car, why wouldn't you go to TrueCar.com? Negotiation-free, guaranteed savings, a hassle-free experience, and a TrueCar certified dealer that is committed to a new and better way to buy a car. Save time, save money, and never overpay. Visit TrueCar.com today. Save some money. Take a vacation. Bring some lotion. You don't want to get a sunburn.
Warriors, come out to play. Warriors, come out to play.
One gang could run this city. One gang. Nothing would move without us allowing it to happen.
Hey, folks, welcome to the podcast. This week, my very good friend Steve Jackson, host of The Drive, Steve Jackson Show on KSRO Radio on the West Coast. Great guy, been in radio 41 years, a really eclectic, cool dude. I go on his show all the time. Have a really fun conversation with him and his producer, Mike DeWald, and a lot of insults flying back and forth. I think you're really going to like it. Check me out doing stand-up. April 26th, I'm going to be at the Bridge Street Live Theater in Collinsville, Connecticut. May 1st through the 3rd, I'm going to be at the Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan. And May 15th to the 17th, I'm going to be at Gotham Comedy Club in New York City. And as always, follow me on Twitter and Facebook and spread the word, people, about the podcast. Thank you.
We got the streets, suckers. Can you dig it?
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how we're going to start this podcast.
KSRO, what are you wearing?
I have on with me today, as my guest, the unbelievably talented Steve Jackson of KSRO, Steve Jackson The Drive, and Swinging with Sinatra. The quintessential radio broadcaster of the last millennium. How's that?
What are you, high?
Welcome to the podcast, buddy. You're on my show now.
Yeah, which is so weird. Excuse me, I have to say this. Okay, it's 1:14 on The Drive. Joining us again is our good friend Paul Mercurio.
See,
I got to interview you. I'm not used to being interviewed.
I know. You. Just for listeners out there, Steve has a fantastic radio show that I go on all the time, produced by some little bumfuck idiot kid, Mike DeWald. He literally has a 12-year-old kid producing it, but he's fabulous. And it's the most fun radio I do anywhere in the country. And we've become, we're like brothers now, the three of us. We're like brothers.
We are brothers. And
dysfunctional brothers who hang out. You come and visit me when I'm on the road and, you know, like show up at my show for like a half hour and then you pass out drunk, and then DeWald has a hot fudge sundae, the producer, and then falls asleep. Who falls asleep after eating a hot fudge sundae?
You forgot the hookers. He's into the hookers.
He's into the, yeah, but they have to look like his fourth grade math teacher to really get him hot.
Well, you know, we're coming to New York in a few weeks, buddy.
Well, we are getting ready for you. It's actually. We're rolling out the not so much a red carpet. It's like a beige carpet with some cigarette burns and gum stuck to it. But yeah, we're psyched. So Steve Jackson is now a guest on my show, as I wanted my listeners and followers to hear about you and learn about you, because you have lived a rich life. To this day, not a lot of people keep wine in the trunk of their car and drink it on a regular basis.
It is a wine cellar on wheels. I'm very proud of it.
Now, for those of you out there, your first question as you're hearing this is Steve Jackson black? Good question, based on the way he talks. The first time I was interviewed by him, I thought, oh, he's a cool black dude. And I met him, and he couldn't be more Italian. So I don't know what's going on there.
I'm part black, motherfucker.
You grew up in Philadelphia.
Detroit.
I thought you grew up in Philly.
No, Detroit. Hey, but and by the way, man, I heard you got Bethany Frankel's show canceled. What an asshole.
Yeah, I know. It did get canceled. I've been on it a few times, and then all of a sudden the ratings started to plummet. That's me. And by the way, some guy should be coming in with an envelope any moment now. It's Paul Mercurio, the cancer of show business, caused your show to be canceled. No more KSRO The Drive. Steve does a really cool show out of Santa Rosa, California, and it's a very eclectic show. I want you to explain a little bit, but you know, you have comedians on, but you have people from the food world, chefs, you have authors, you have wine experts. And how did the show come about? The show, I know you're thinking about trying to syndicate it nationally, which I think would be a great idea, but describe the show for people.
Well, we call it a variety talk show. I mean, each day it's 3 to 6 in the afternoon here on the West Coast, and we're located in the middle of wine country, which is the most gorgeous place in the North Bay. And but the station is powerful, so it goes to San Francisco and the East Bay and such. So we got quite a wide listenership, which is cool. But it's really a variety talk show. We have live music bands in all the time. In fact, we have a great band today coming in a bit, and we talked to politicians locally and nationally. We've talked to Colin Powell and Jimmy Carter and people like that, and all sorts of other folks, and lots of comedians. Everybody that comes through San Francisco each week at the Punchline or Cobb's will be on our show via the phone, and you're on all the time, thank God, because it's so much fun when you're joining us. And yeah, man, we do a thing called Wine Wednesday, where we literally have all the big shot wine guys and women in, and we go through, you know, 6 to 12 bottles of wine. We don't drink the whole thing, but we taste that many.
Yeah, right. Well, by the way, I got the email last night from him. What are we going to talk about? I could just babble on forever. I'm like, don't worry about it, because I was surprised. It must have been, I don't know, 7 o'clock your time when you sent that email, and I was like, wow, I thought he'd be passed out drunk by now. That was pretty impressive that you.
I wasn't passed out, but I was drunk, and that's because that was Thursday, and on Thursday now we do a thing called Brewhaha every week, where we have craft brew people come in, and we do beer tasting. So we have Wine Wednesday, we have Beer Thursday, Rehab Friday, and then we start again on Saturday.
But don't forget OxyContin Tuesday, where you sample the best of the OxyContin, which is my favorite drug of all. So how did you, did you fall into this format? I mean, you've been in radio 41 years, is that right?
Yeah, 41, yeah. Well, I was here. I was doing my Sinatra show, which is syndicated in the U.S., and it's called Swinging with Sinatra, and I was doing that. It's been 12 years now, so I was doing that, and I have my production company, so I was doing commercial production. And then I used to work here at KSRO back in the day, and I came back because I was kind of bored and I wanted to do some new stuff again, so I did some news stuff, anchoring and some reporting, and then the guy who had the 3 to 6 shift, he's a former mayor of the city of Petaluma, California, he decided to run for the council again, and that means he couldn't be on the radio, he couldn't have his own radio show, so I just happened to be hanging, and the GM at the time said, hey man, you got to do this show, and so we called it the Drive, and I said, let me do it my way, and they said, sure. And by
hanging, by the way, everybody, that meant he was cleaning weed on a Pink Floyd album in the GM's office, probably.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. That was exactly it. Drinking wine, smoking weed, and he said, you know what? I think you should do the 3 to 6. And I said, I'll take it.
Did you have, an itch to get back in at that point?
Well, this is a dream gig for me. And at my age and 41 years in radio, this is really my retirement gig. We've been doing it 6 years. I'm going to go until I literally croak right on the air.
And that will happen, because when you see this guy, you're going to be like, wow, I didn't know people lived to be 140. You're going to, that's what people are going to, I want, you know. And by the way, I don't see you doing news. I want people to Google you, Steve Jackson, J-A-X-O-N, and you're going to, and a very bohemian looking guy who's like, the picture's like, hey, what do you need? I got it right here in the trunk. I got it in the trunk of my car. Like, that's that look you have. So I don't see you doing news. It doesn't connect for me.
Well, I'm a political junkie. I have been since I was young. And I actually started in news. All I wanted to be was a rock star. And I was a musician starting at the age of 12 and traveling around. I missed most of my junior year in high school because our band was on the road. But I managed to get out of high school, and then I went to Michigan State and got into radio there, and somebody heard me on the Michigan State station and got a hold of me and offered me a job at the number one station in Lansing, Michigan, and it was a news gig. And so I had hair down, you know, to my ass and a beard and no suits or anything, and they wanted me to be a reporter. So I started covering City Hall and then eventually the state capitol in Lansing, and I had to borrow my dad's suits and stuff. And I'd be in the press room at the Michigan State Capitol, and all these hard-drinking, cigar-smoking, guys, your typical old-style full-goose bozo reporters, they called me the hippie, and they were giving me shit all the time. And then one day they invited me across to the Jack Tar Hotel for a drink, and I was like 19. And the bartender said, I need to see his ID. And one of the guys says, Tommy, knock it off. The kid's with us. So then I'm 19. I'm drinking at the Jack Tar Hotel with a bunch of guys who I used to watch on Detroit television. And wound up loving news, man. And then I became news director at the age of 21.
You were a news director?
I've been news director at 5 stations now, over the last 41 years.
You can barely button your own fly. What are you talking about? This is complete. Are you serious? Someone put you in charge of news? You can't even stay at a comedy club show of mine for more than an hour. You wander off like some Alzheimer's patient. Next thing I know, it's the next morning and you're like, yeah, I passed out on my bed. There's something seriously wrong with this story.
Here, let me give you an example.
All right.
President Nixon today said at the White House that, it's just all attitude.
Yeah, but you can. So when you were doing the news then, this is you're covering local politics, which I think is the most entertaining politics in the world. This is 35 years. What are we talking? 70s, right? A different set of rules, right? Like you see a little something, that the congressman, the local guy, the local city council guy's got a little something, something on the side with a woman. You don't say anything, right? Like it's a different world then.
Yeah, back then it was. I started at WITL in the news department in 1972. My first big gig was Agnew resigning. I remember I was in the newsroom that day, and back then, pre-digital, of course, we actually cut tape and used blades and grease pencils. But the UPI and the AP wires started dinging, ding, 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 and I went over there, and it says, Spiro Agnew is resigning, and I had to go live on the air with it, and I was scared shitless, but that was exciting. And then I started getting into it, and I became a political junkie. I canvassed for George McGovern in 1972, and ever since then, I've been into it. And
why your parents liberal? Is that why you had the liberal bent?
My dad was moderate. My mother was a hardcore Republican. Her father, who was one of the top attorneys in Detroit and then a prosecutor in Detroit and ran for state attorney general, did not win, but he ran for it. And then he became assistant state attorney general, and he was a hardcore Republican. So my mother always was too. But I was from day one. I was a raging, insane, progressive, left-wing, liberal nut. And I still am.
Yes, you are. Now, when you're covering news like that at that age, like, were there any really great, juicy stories, local stories that you covered where you, like, look back and go, man, I can't believe that happened or that we didn't report that? Like just anything crazy that was, like, typical local politics kind of thing?
No. It was boring as hell.
Was it really?
It was. Locally, there wasn't that much going on. In fact, I had to cover, what we call in San Francisco the Board of Supervisors. Back in Michigan, they called it the County Commissioners. And I had to go to the City Council meeting, County Commissioner meetings, which are at night, and boring as shit. I just would try and stay awake, and then I had to go and write a story about it and do a voicer. They'd say, the council met last night. WITL Steve Jackson files this report. And I'd go, well, I don't know what happened, but there was a bunch of old fucks sitting around talking. I don't know.
You actually sound like DeWald. you are DeWald. DeWald, look at DeWald. I don't know if you can hear this, but I want you to look at Steve because that's you in 90 years. That's you right there. So What? But were you playing in a band still at the time, or were you like, oh, I'm done with that? I'm not.
No. I played the entire time. In fact, just recently, a few years ago, I reformed my band that I had in the '80s. We were really hot shit, and we would play all over the place. And so I'm now. Yeah. I'm officially retired now.
You find venues with wheelchair ramps to get your whole band in and out?
I paid all the money I made in this last round of gigs a few years ago. I gave to DeWald to be my drum roadie. I couldn't carry that stuff.
That's true. You have a heart attack lifting a cigarette. Never have I met a man who doesn't take any care of himself and doesn't care. I love it. You're like my hero.
Yeah, but you want to know this? I'm at Kaiser now, and I went in January, and you know they say if your triglycerides are around 500, you're near death. Mine was 1,800. They couldn't even get a cholesterol level because my triglycerides were so high. In a little over a month, I've lost 13 pounds, and they did the blood test again, and my triglycerides went from 1,800 to 243. My cholesterol's great, and I feel good.
How'd you lose the weight? Heroin?
So you got any other questions for me?
You lost 13 pounds?
Yeah.
I can't wait to see you, man. You're going to be like sashaying that ass of yours in New York City.
I will. Next time you see me, I'll probably be about 90 pounds.
No, we don't want you to be like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. Please, come on. We don't need that. So, is the band the first calling for you? Like do you like that you moved into radio and this has been your life? Because I know your son is in a band and doing really well, and March 20th he's going to be playing at Webster Hall in New York. And did that get derailed intentionally, or how did that kind of play out?
It was strictly age. I just, you know, I couldn't schlep the drums around anymore. It's so much work, and I did it so long and got the, you know, had some amazing bands, traveled around the country, and radio, especially when this gig came up. I'm having more fun than I've had in 41 years in radio, and it was like, okay, enough. In fact, I gave my new set of drums to my son and his band, and they've got them up in Portland in their studio. He just flew in from Paris last night. They were in Europe for a month, and he's home for about a week. Then he's heading for a six-week tour of the U.S., and as you mentioned, we will all be at Webster Hall on March 20th there in New York.
It's going to be awesome. So what do you, so the radio, like, full-time for you kicked in after the news gig, and then, like, sort of, you know, And was it always sort of Michigan-based, or did you, like a lot of radio people, move around the country?
I didn't want to do what most people in radio who are successful do, and that is move all over the place, and you know, they get fired, and then they got to go another place. I left Michigan for a job in Austin, Texas that was a blast. That was 1975. I had so much fun. 5 years there. Then I came out here to San Jose, and I did two terms in San Jose, and literally I called them terms.
I was going to say, it's like...
But the money was good. And then I came up to wine country, and it was like I got what I call the Sonoma coma, and I didn't want to leave. And so, but after a while, you know, I did a bunch of morning shows, you know, comedy morning shows with partners.
Yeah, like the Crazy Zoo, the Morning Zoo with Steve. Yeah. And you were Steve Vicario, but you changed your name, right?
Well, they changed my name from Vicario to Jackson in my first gig, because back then you had to be non-regional. Hi, I'm from nowhere.
Oh, and they felt like if you sounded like a WAP Guinea, the people wouldn't listen to you in Alabama. Yeah.
I guess. And one day I came in and they had used something I had done the night before for some council meeting or something. And I walked in and the news director says, "Hey, Steve Jackson." And I said, "What? What? No." It turns out he had looked at the map on the wall, the map of Michigan in the newsroom. And Jackson, Michigan is near Lansing, Michigan. So he named me Steve Jackson. And Jackson is the shithole of Michigan. It's where the state prison is. And I said, "Oh, come on." He said, "I've already used it. You can change it when you go to another gig." And I asked him if I could change the spelling. He said, "It's radio. I don't give a crap how you spell it." So I changed it to Jaxon. And for some reason, it's stuck, and I've kept it ever since.
Because I'm telling you, if you spelled it Jackson, between that and your voice, everybody would mistake you for black. I'm telling you, man, you should be a black guy. It would be way better for you. You'd get more free shit. You'd get into more places, affirmative action. Yeah, you'd get more white chicks.
Right.
But like now radio over the years has changed, right? Like, did you like the morning? Do you like doing what you're doing now? Do you miss the morning kind of vibe? And it's changed over the years because you could really have more latitude back in the 70s and 80s, right, to kind of have long interviews with people. And now it's like, not so much your show now, but generally in radio, it's about playing the music and very short breaks for people to talk. Like, how did it change and why did it change?
Well, it did. It changed heavily in the 80s, really. And in fact, in the 80s, I once said that radio broke my heart because radio was so creative when I got into it. And we had so much fun in Austin.
In what way was it creative?
Well, they like in Austin, I worked at a station called Coke FM, K-O-K-E. And it was what's now called Americana. But we played anything and everything, you know, from jazz to country to, and we picked our own music. The albums were all there in the studio, and it was just a blast. Back when radio, you know, the old FM thing, where people, the guys on the air actually picked every song that they played, and it was just wide open and creative, and there was a lot of comedy stuff. Then when it started getting more formatted, I was doing more morning radio because the rest of the time, it just didn't make sense because they wouldn't let you, you know, they give you freedom in the morning because you're supposed to be entertaining. And I always had partners like Blair Hardman, who you've met. We did two different shows together in the morning, you know, and it was a blast. We actually were doing heavy comedy, you know, writing, producing, recording stuff for the shows. And then they started tightening up everything. And then, evil assholes like Clear Channel and Cumulus came onto the scene and started buying up all these stations, and it became so corporate, and it was all consultants and the guys in suits who didn't know anything about radio telling you how to be creative. And that's when radio broke my heart. But
the great thing about radio is that somebody who really doesn't know anything about, and you know, I work in TV, it's all the same thing. It's you're producing entertainment, and somebody who doesn't know anything about entertainment and producing entertainment can kind of learn on their feet. And don't you think that's like, you can't go to school for that. You can't pay for that education.
No way. That's why I always thought the Columbia School of Broadcasting and things like that were just people wasting their money.
Right. Well, you got caught cheating on a test in Columbia School of Broadcasting and were thrown out. That's what I was told. Is DeWall there, by the way?
Of course. He's in his usual position. I'm sitting in my position.
I want to get him on the phone with us. Can he get on the phone with us in a few minutes? Because I want him to be part of this conversation.
Yeah, you know him. He doesn't like talking on the radio, but he's got a mic.
I'll get him to talk. Don't worry about it. Get him to talk. So, like, if you, so in what you're doing now, like, see, the great thing about your show is you come on and it doesn't even feel like it's a radio show. It just feels like you're hanging out. And anytime I call in, I'm on hold. And by the way, you interviewed President Carter. How did you not screw that up? Who would let you do that?
I know. It's pretty amazing. I said, hello, Mr. President. Thank you for joining us. And he said, thank you for having me, Steve. And I went, wow, the former president just called me by name. That's pretty hip. In fact, he's coming on again in a month or so. He's got a new book out and he'll be joining us again.
Is he going to be in the studio?
No, it'll be a phoner, you know.
Make sure that I could be on the call when he calls, so then I can ask him some awkward questions.
All right, no problem.
You know what I mean? Like, what is he? And so, have you ever been intimidated interviewing anybody in terms of sort of like, which I don't think you are. You're a great conversationalist, even though you half the time you're drunk or high. But is it? And by the way, I'm jealous. You guys can get legalized marijuana out there anytime you want, and I'm still fighting to get it over. You gotta talk to people out here for me. You know what I'm saying? You gotta send me.
I will.
I'm a card-carrying medical marijuana patient. I use it all the time.
Yeah. Would you tell people? Would you tell the doctor what's wrong with you?
He just looked at me and said, "You get whatever you want. You want heroin, morphine, marijuana, whatever."
Just handed you the script pad and said, "Go for it." That's awesome. Were you? Did he have you stripped down to your boxers and black shorts?
Yeah, I turn my head and cough. I do that most days.
That's one of
DeWald's things that he has to do before the show.
He's got to hold it and you got to cough.
I turn my head and cough, and then we know we're ready to go.
We were in Sacramento and you came to see me, and then you meandered back to your hotel in between shows. You see what happens, folks, is I have like two shows on a Saturday, and the boys come out, DeWald and Hayes and Jackson, and we hang out. And then Jackson, like a ninja, slips into the night between shows, and you don't know where he is. And you go back to the room, and he answers the door, and his
It's like he started, first of all, like from the head down, this is what he looks like. Well, go from the feet up. Black socks, bony, like chicken legs.
Chicken legs, yeah.
And he's got some boxers on that, a homeless guy would be like, you know what? No, I'm good. I'm not going to wear those. And then you go to the head, into the head, and it's like he stuck a fork in an outlet. Like the hair is just everywhere. And you're like, what are you doing?
On a good night.
On a good night. And you're like, what are you doing? It's 11 o'clock. He's like, I don't know. One of my testicles is up in my body and I got to find it. I'll meet in a little while. And then, and then DeWall gets seasick going up an escalator. You know, I'm dealing with people who cannot function outside of a radio station. That's the problem.
That's pretty much it. That's why we get to drink so much on the show, because, you know, if we otherwise we really can't function in the real world. So we'd never be able to have any fun if we didn't, you know, have wine and beer on the show.
I have called you from airports, from the Daily Show, the Colbert Show, my apartment, my bathroom, in my bathrobe, naked. I've talked to you naked while I was getting ready for something. I know,
yeah,
you got to
enjoy that.
You got a sense of that. Why don't you really do porn chat with that voice? What do you? Why would you even go to work? Just sit in your apartment. Just here. Just say, I'm taking off my pants. Go ahead.
I'm taking off my pants. What are you wearing?
That's $1,000 right there.
Yeah, I would. Damn, you know you're right.
Right? Just say, touch it there. Go.
Touch it there.
Yes! That's unbelievable. I like that little second touch. That's like...
I think I got wood, Paul.
Yeah, I know I did. I got to squeeze one off. Give me a minute. Okay, good. Here we go. Back to the interview. If you're in this sort of mode of like 6 years doing this, but I don't see you hanging this up because, you mean, you're really good at it. You are a political junkie. You have a very wide variety of interests. Is it something that you'd like to do? I think your show would be great nationally, don't you think?
Yeah, and hopefully after this interview, I'll either be fired or I'll maybe get syndicated.
No, trust me, you will be fired. I'm sending this out to as many people as possible. Now, when you come to New York, last time you came to New York for my listeners, it was like, I don't know, April or May.
And April, yeah.
April was like 60, 65, you know, pretty warm. It's muggy in New York. And he's walking around like Sherlock Holmes in a wool, like double brimmed cap and a pipe and then a wool vest, wool underwear, boots, like hiking boots for the Himalayas. And he's like, man, it's really hot. And like you're walking around like, this guy's going to have a heart attack at any moment. What are you planning to wear for your trip out in March? Maybe like a parka and put a couple of hand warmers in your anus? What's the plan?
Well, you know, things are going so well here. I've hired Raul. He's my personal valet. So he'll be joining us there, and he'll have with him very many changes of clothes as we walked through the streets of Manhattan. And if I need something, Raul will be right there. So.
All right, so it's my mother's birthday last week, and I'm just like, what am I going to send her? You know, she's 82 or 5 or I'm not sure. I try not to keep track of that stuff. Details. Anyway, she always gets flowers from us, and I'm thinking, you know, I got to mix it up. And someone told me about Sherry's Berries, and folks, it was such a hit. You don't need a holiday to send a delicious treat. It's the easiest way to show someone you're thinking of them. Really delicious strawberries dipped in dark chocolate, white chocolate. It was crazy. And she just like, oh my God, they were so juicy. They were so delicious. It was a huge hit, okay? So send giant dipped strawberries from Sherry's Berries for only $19.99. Unbelievable. That's over a 40% savings. Go to berries.com, click on the microphone, and type in Mercurio, M-E-C-U-R-I-O. I'm telling you, they're going to be a hit. My mother, I think, actually likes me again. That's how big a hit it was. They're delicious. They're huge. They're juicy. The chocolate is the best that you could get your hands on and your fingers on and your lips on. It's just a great product and was a big hit with my mom. And I know it's going to be a big hit with anybody you send it to. So now here's the only way to get this special $19.99 Sherry's Berries offer. Visit berries.com, okay? berries.com. Click on the microphone in the top right corner and type in Mercurio, my last name, M E C URIO. You've got to see these enormous berries for yourself. They're unbelievable. You could literally put your head on them. They're like a pillow. They're a beautiful thing. Go to berries.com, click on the microphone, and type in Mercurio. Don't wait. Order now. $19.99, 40% savings. You're going to be a hero. I'm telling you.
How have you seen politics over the in the years change in this country in terms of like the conversation? Like you've been in the conversation, you've covered news, you've had radio shows, you've interviewed everybody from presidents to sheep, and he does the best interview of a sheep that you ever want to see. By the way, it's touching and it's moving. But like, how have you? I mean, just from your vantage point as someone who's been in the conversation, and how have you seen that sort of change over the years?
Paul Mercurio is joining us on The Drive. Oh, I'm sorry. I slipped into my regular mode there.
Exactly.
Well, since 1972 when I started, everything's changed, man. It sucks. We all know this. I mean, well, you know, like I said, I'm a very progressive liberal, and it drives me nuts. In fact, I was seriously considering moving to Vancouver and becoming an expat before this show started, and if I could do this show from Vancouver, I'd move.
Why?
This country is making me sick.
Why?
Look at what's going on. My God, you know, we got a black president, and half the Congress is they're like bigots, and nobody can get along. And this every day I
start. Oh, see, I thought you were going another way. Like, we got a black president. Can you believe it? What's going on wrong? I thought you were going that way with it. All right.
No.
Well, obviously, I have a different attitude than you do, because I'm like, whoa, what the hell is going on? Next thing you know, Asians are going to want to control, like, the electronics industry. No, but it is dysfunctional. I mean, you live in a state, you know, gay marriage, you know, they just had this Arizona bill that, you know, thank God the governor vetoed, that basically was saying you can discriminate against gays based on religious grounds.
And it wasn't just gays. It was the way the law was written. I mean, if you had a shop in Phoenix and said that you don't believe in divorce, your religion doesn't back divorce, you will not serve anyone who's been divorced or a single mother or anybody. It was obvious they were aiming it at gays because they're so anti-gay, but It was the most insane bill I've ever heard of in my life, and most people will say that, at least on our side of things. And that's, you know, she didn't want to veto it. She would have loved to have been able to get it through, but they would have canceled next year's Super Bowl in Arizona, like they did a few years back. They canceled the Super Bowl because Arizona was the only state that wouldn't allow Martin Luther King Day, and the NFL pulled out. That was way back when, and they were threatened.
Which I thought was a great idea. But, you know, again, that's just me and where I roll. You know what I'm saying? It's like, hey, you know, you got your other days there. I mean, you really? All right, I get it. But for someone in California, like, do you find sometimes that agenda there is too liberal even for you? Or, like, do you feel like, no?
Not at all. It's not liberal enough for me. And
what would you like? Why? Would you like to legalize death? Like, what are you talking about? What more do you want?
Well, certainly, it took us a while to get gay marriage to
get,
and it took the Supreme Court to do that.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of conservatives in this state, but it's all Democrats who run everything. And in fact, Sonoma County, where we are, is the most liberal county in the state, basically, us and the county of San Francisco. And, you know, there's one Republican out of 50, 60 lawmakers in this area.
Jesus.
Yeah.
So is it...
The only reason he got elected is because it's a nonpartisan position. So a lot of people voted for him, didn't even know he was a Republican.
And then if there's anything that you could sort of... I don't think Canada's the answer, though. I don't agree with you. I think where you are is fine.
It's beautiful here, but it's beautiful in Vancouver. You know, I grew up in Detroit. We used to go to Canada all the time. I love Canada.
Do you miss Detroit?
Well, not now. Are you kidding? You seen that place lately?
Oh, come on. It's great. Come on.
No, I dig. I was back there a few years ago, and actually I had a blast, and it's just the inner city core that is so screwed up. But, you know, they're getting a lot done, and there's still great music and some great entertainment and art and stuff.
I'm going to Royal. I'm going to Royal Oak, Michigan, in May. May 1st through the 3rd.
Yeah, I used to, that's a suburb of Detroit. It's beautiful. My family, my sister used to live there. It's cool.
When you were on the road playing in bands, any like crazy nights, crazy moments? Because guys in bands just get stuff to given to them, and chicks throw themselves at you. Like anything happen? Anything, you know, like when you were touring those old age homes, and any women just roll up in their iron lung and go, "Hey, if you can get a pulse out of me, go for it."
Let me just say this: I know for a fact, can't be proven, and thankfully it can't be proven. But there's little Jacksons all over the country that I don't know about.
Thank God.
You're not talking about the Jackson family. You're talking about little Jacksonians.
Yeah, little Jacksonians. I'll tell you one story that sticks in my head. We were playing, I forget where, but somewhere in the Midwest, and this beautiful girl walked up on stage while we were playing, and she just looked kind of zombified, but she was gorgeous. And she walked over next to my drum set, stripped completely naked, and sat cross-legged next to the drums and stayed there for the rest of the set.
And that was my mother. Wait, why?
I'm old enough to be your dad.
No. Did anything happen after that? Did you?
Yes. In the motel.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, of course. In fact, she walked across. She got in my car, or in a car I was in, carrying her clothes, still naked. Everybody was laughing and kind of pointing, but nobody did anything. There were no cops around. She got in the car. We went to the motel. She got out of the car naked and went into the room with me. Needless to say, there's probably twins in that town that look like me.
I'm surprised in the middle of sex with somebody, you just didn't like wander off and go back to your hotel room and pass out.
I might have. I just don't remember. Who are we talking to, Mike? Oh, Paul Mercurio, right. Yeah.
Hey, why did you get fired and then rehired so quickly in 2010?
Yeah, we were in about the second year of the show, and the owners who had the station at the time were total idiots. They lived in Connecticut. They didn't know anything about Northern California.
Maverick Media?
Yes, Maverick Media. Yeah. And what happened was they called me and two other major players in one day and said, "We can't pay you anymore. The bank won't let us pay you anymore," because they didn't have the money. And
No, they said the bank, they had your show on in the bank. And
the bank said, "This guy sucks."
People were literally killing themselves in the bank.
So I left for 2 weeks and then came back and went to the GM, who was a friend of mine who was from, you know, who knows California. He wasn't with the company, but he worked for them. And I said, "Let's think outside the box. Give me my own sponsors each hour and I'll come back and put it through my company." And we did. And now the new owners, who are local and great and really cool, get the show, get me, and they're paying me, and I'm getting paid by sponsors through my company, so it works out for everybody.
It's a really great show because it's a throwback, and I mean that in a positive way, to like the Dick Cavett Show and like Tonight Show, in the sense of like you'll have an author, you'll just have a wide variety of really interesting guests and not the same old predictable stuff. And get DeWald on. I want to talk to DeWald with you on the phone. Can he get on with you?
Hi, Mikey. Get a mic. By the way, you know, on the drive each day, we have an average every day of 10 to 12 guests, each on a different.
Do you really?
Each on a different topic.
I actually thought that was your number of listeners, but
it could be.
You.
It could be, but that's the number of guests as well. And I'll tell you, I walk out of here at 6 every night with smoke coming out of my ears, and it's crazy, man.
Which is amazing because you do zero prep. You just roll in.
It's true.
I
do.
And then is Mike getting on?
He's here. Say hi, Mike.
Hi, Paul.
Oh my God, that was so creepy. See, every time the guy talks, everybody listening, everybody wants to take their pants, right? You feel gross, right? Go take a shower, people. We'll hold.
Mike, show all the Paul's listener. Show Paul's listener that how you answer the phone.
Well, let me set up who this is. This is Mike DeWald. By the way, I don't need to reset on a podcast because people tuned in voluntarily, as opposed to yours where they just fall into it while they're sitting in a McDonald's waiting to get their food. Mike DeWald is a young man of about 26 who has the body of a hairless chinchilla. That's my little nickname for him. And Mike is Steve's producer. So imagine Walter Matthau. And then imagine Corey Haim just before he dies. That's the relationship. And Mike, I want people to know what it's like to work with Steve Jackson. But before, please, I'll pretend I'm the phone ringing. Ring, ring.
KSRO.
Creepy! Totally creepy. Pedophile creepy. Okay?
KSRO, what are you wearing?
Every time I call in, he has to be quiet. So I get the creepy thing. And then I feel like I just raped a little boy. Or I'm about to. So how did you come to work with Steve Jackson?
I was forcibly put into it against my will.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, he was at a hockey game for middle school boys.
Hey, I like your pads. Nice pads. Steve Jackson.
Well, you know, he was already here when I got here. He'd been here for a few years, and he was running the board and doing some production for the other show. But so he was already in place, and I think when I first started the show, he thought I was the biggest idiot and didn't want anything to do with it. But it didn't take long, and we got the show rolling, and then now we're best buddies. And
can I ask you to answer this? Let the kid talk, will you? This is the problem right here. I said Mike. Didn't I say Mike? How did you come to work with him?
Well, I'll step in here.
It's 1:50 on the Friday drive. We're talking to Paul Mercurio. Oh, I'm sorry. I keep...
Mike, so what did you think of him when you first saw him? Did you think, wow, somebody let in the local pot dealer? Like, what did you think?
It was a 180 from the prior work I was doing. So it definitely had to...
Which was running the tilt-a-wheel at the local circus?
He was working with a very straight politician, let's put it that way. And then he got a crazy pot-smoking drunk guy.
Cool. That's a fair assessment.
What was was there anything with Steve you had to adjust in the way you worked, or you know, other than duct taping him to his chair so he doesn't tip over in the middle of interviews? What was it?
It's a lot came along with the show. You know, I have to get him up in the morning and dress him and make sure we wheel him in and prop him up and wheel him out at the end of the day.
He's really good at making sure I take all my meds too.
Don't forget putting salve on his rash.
I have no rash.
It's because he put salve on it and it's gone. Yeah, you had one. So as a producer, tell people what a producer does on a radio show.
It's just making the show happen. You get the people to come on, you make sure all the equipment works, make sure Steve knows what he's talking about. Generally, and,
hardest thing to work deal with talent. Generally, what is it?
Geez.
Don't look at Steve. Don't look at Steve. Look away.
He's not looking at me.
You pussy. Look away.
No, it's just making sure. I basically every day just try to come up with a show that is going to kill him. I just go from the most random transition of topics. So,
and yeah, he's trying to kill me.
That's the goal.
He's trying to kill me because we have 12 guests on and it's all different topics and I have to sit here. But he is the most amazing booker of shows that I've ever worked with. That's how we get Colin Powell and Jimmy Carter, and we've had Rob Reiner, Carl Reiner, all these people on.
How are you getting these? Because Mike, you have the social skills of Rain Man. I've been with you. So how do you do that? How do you get somebody of that ilk on a show?
Bribes and sexual favors.
Wow. And you're giving sexual favors?
No, it's truly amazing. You should see when we're in New York in a few weeks, I'll have him show you his contacts in his iPhone. It is unbelievable. Some of the most famous people in the world, he has their cell number.
How are you making these contacts, Mike?
You just search them out. Usually people are willing to come on. Once I tell them it's with Steve, they don't fight too much. So they're game.
And we get a lot of repeats, you know, and that's why we have the Hall of Fame now, which you are a member of. We've been inducting people since January.
Yes, and you, by the way, you brought the certificate to San Francisco Punchline when I was there a couple of months ago, and you didn't even give it to me because you both fell asleep in your respective rooms. Like, you know, that's great. You'd be great as presenters at the Oscars. Seriously, you could have had a little ceremony for me. I could have a little glass of champagne or a cupcake or something with me in San Francisco.
We're bringing it to New York in a few weeks. Whether we,
whether
we give it to you or not is a whole other story.
So when you're producing Mike and Steve's not, do you ever have to like give Steve a note, like turn around the mics the other way, something like that?
Oh yeah. Like,
generally a few times during each interview. It's just a constant stream of notes and reminders.
And in all seriousness, what did you learn from Steve? Because you had to learn something because he's been doing this for so long. What did you learn?
That's a good question. Just,
Go ahead. You can say it. Nothing.
I think that pretty much sums it up, Steve. You're useless. You're a useless human being.
Thank you very much, everybody. I'll be here all week. Thank you.
Well, I think he has a genuine interest. Like, whenever I hear him interview anybody, I don't think he, and I don't think it's fake, right? Like, I think that's the throwback to Carson and Jack Parr and David Susskind and these guys and Larry King before he lost his mind with those suspenders and that.
No, but you know what? To be serious just for a second or sort of, it really is just being yourself. And it took me years on the radio, and you still hear a lot of people, especially younger people who are trying to get it, you know, who have been in radio a few years or something. You know, they're just trying to be somebody they're not. And especially on a show like this, you know, I just kick back and I don't care what I say for the most part. And, you know, it's well, you know, you've been on so many times. We just shoot the shit.
Well, when did that? When did you turn the corner on that in your radio career? When was it? Was there a day the light bulb went off and went, I got to stop being the morning zoo guy or the guy that I think they want me to be? And what was the and the second part of that question is what was the biggest learning curve for you in doing radio as well as you do it?
Geez, I don't know. Probably maintaining a perfect buzz. You know, you have to. It's very tricky. You don't want to be too high, but
right.
Really in the early 90s, Blair Hardman, who you know, we started the Jackson and Blair show on a station, and we were doing mornings, but we hated morning zoos, you know, with the guys cackling in the background and all the
forced, that's yelling. Forced, contrived kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. We both just despised the hell out of it, so we decided to try something different, and we did more interviews. It was kind of like the genesis of The Drive in my head in some ways, and we were funny as hell. He had a recording studio, so we'd go in the afternoon and record songs and bits and play them the next day. But there was no morning zoo mentality to it. It was a lot more intelligent, and the people in this area, you know, in the Bay Area, appreciated that. And that's probably the genesis of my thoughts on this show. And now I've been.
How did you come up with Swingin' with Sinatra? And did you like have any chance to meet him? Because my uncle was a crazy Sinatra fan. Every time he came to Providence, Rhode Island, he saw him for four. In fact, the local paper did a piece on my uncle, like 40 straight years of going to see him with his wife.
Wow. And
yeah. How did that come about? You started in 2006, right?
No, 2002. No,
oh, okay.
Yeah, 2003. Yeah, 2003 was the first show. But actually, I grew up with it at home, my dad and my mom. But my dad was just insane about Sinatra as well. And so I grew up with it, and I always dug it. And I was a rock and roller, but actually, there's a group of stations in town owned by a friend of mine, and he's one of the most successful broadcasters ever. And he's a big Sinatra fan. And my wife at the time was working as a salesperson at his stations. And we've known each other since the 80s. And I would go to all their Christmas parties. And one Christmas, and we would both bring our favorite Sinatra stuff and play it at the Christmas party, much to the chagrin of the staff. And since he owned the place, he'd go, "Shut up, we're playing more Sinatra." So one year, we were both in a hurry to get there. Neither of us brought any Sinatra, which made the staff very happy. And we were sitting around before dinner having drinks, and he said, "You know, you should do a show on my station." It was a smooth jazz station at the time. And I said, "Hey, that sounds like fun. And what the hell?" It was the Christmas show, and I put something together in January. He went nuts. So it's been on for, I guess, 12 years now. And then somebody picked it up and called me and said, "Hey, we love this show," and it went national in Canada, and it's crazy, man.
And so, yeah, well, where can people check that out?
You know, I have no idea, other than I know it's Albany, New York, and Columbus, Ohio, and it's here. But you can.
What do you mean you have no idea? This is again gets back to like you're the worst host ever. Like I just set you up to explain a really cool thing, and then it's like you come, you go all the way, and then like you're in the middle of sex, and then you walk away because you see a fly on the wall. Like what is wrong with you? And how do you continue to function in a world without someone attending to you 24/7? What do you mean you don't know? You should know in your head where your radio show is.
I talk to 12 different people a day on 12 different subjects. I have the attention span of a gnat's ass, so I don't know. But I have to check with Kathy, my business manager. She'll tell you where we are. But I can tell you this: if you go to kjzy.com, you can stream it live every Saturday night from 6 to 8 Pacific time.
You should have me on. Like we could talk about Sinatra.
Yeah. Okay. No, that would be cool.
My uncle loved it.
Yeah. No, that's big. You will do Sinatra memories.
So, hardest interview you ever did? Either like it started going south early, or like just something weird happened, or you weren't prepared, and it just like does anything stand out, or weirdest, or funniest, or whatever?
The most nervous I've been in the 6 years of this show was Colin Powell, but luckily Mike came up with some questions, and I had a couple, and I was able to.
What was the first question? So, are you black? Yeah, okay. Because that's a weird name.
He asked you.
Did he get on and go, hey, my brother?
The worst interview on the show ever? What's his name, Mark?
Just like a bizarre thing that, you know, because...
It was horrible.
Not even just this show, just any your history going back to covering news in Michigan, whatever.
Well, first off, the worst comedian, if you want to know the worst comedian we've ever had on, Arj Barker.
Oh, really?
He's 86th from the show. He was on once, and he was so bad, I just said, all right, that's enough.
Oh,
I don't know. He could be, he's probably a sweetheart, whatever, but he was horrible.
He's a nice guy. Yeah. Went south fast, and just like the guy was weird or the chick was weird or whatever?
The worst one ever. I was almost in tears afterwards. We had our senior political analyst from Sonoma State University, Dave McCune, in the studio with us, and it was one of our, we hardly ever have conservatives on. We had this Jew guy on.
Did you just say Jew guy?
Jewish gentleman.
That's the Italian racist in you coming out. Woo!
I grew up with Italians and Jewish guys. No, Bernie Goldberg, and he's on TV. He's the biggest asshole ever. And he just, and we both, Dave McCune and I, very intelligent. He's intelligent. This guy just was such an asshole that we were stunned, we were speechless, we were out without speech. I finally just said, hang up, Mike.
Why? Was he just spewing conservative, like, claptrap?
Yeah, and he was, you know, getting name-calling to us, and, you know, you sons of bitches.
Well, maybe because you started the interview. Joining us now on The Drive, it's 1:14, Jew Guy. Jew Guy is here. Maybe that, like, tipped it off a little bit.
We have millions of Jews on every year. I'm not racist, for God's sake.
Do you have any of those sneaky Asians on, as you like to call them, when we're having Chinese food?
Yeah.
How about Puerto Ricans? You got any of those on?
Everything I've learned about race in the world, I've learned from Paul Mercurio, folks. So.
Thank you very much. Mexican, racist, Dominican, they're all very much.
Hey, when the hell is this thing going to air? I got to go.
It's going to air. We're going to go. You don't end the I end the conversation. You don't end the conversation. You don't talk for DeWall. I'm running the show. Oh, please, please have a heart attack on my show. Please, this would be the best. It would be the best if you did this. All right, listen, we're going to wrap this up now. People can hear you on KSRO Radio, 3 to 6 Pacific time in Santa Rosa, Sonoma County area. Swinging with Sinatra. Good luck hearing that, people. The guy who hosts it doesn't even know where it is.
By the way, you can stream every day, KSRO.com, at 3 to 6 Pacific time. KSRO.com. You should check it out, folks. We got a lot of people streaming all over the world. It's cool.
And Mike DeWall can be seen, producer for the Steve Jackson Drive Show, can be seen cowering in a shower surrounded by men at any YMCA in the country.
I love you.
Mike DeWald, Steve Jackson, Mike DeWald is producer, The Drive. We did it, buddy. It was great. Flew by. I'm going to go. Beautiful. This is about 5 minutes of this is usable. All right.
All right. I'll talk to you soon, and I'll see you in a few weeks.
All right. Yeah, can't wait. Oh, Jesus. It's going to be great.
Bye-bye.
All right. So that was Steve Jackson and Mike DeWald of The Drive KSRO. I hope you enjoyed it. Love those guys. And they're also completely out of their minds. Thanks for checking out the podcast. And we got more fun stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks. A couple of big guests coming up. And check me out doing stand-up. April 26th, I'm going to be doing one night only at the Bridge Street Live Theater in Collinsville, Connecticut. May 1st through the 3rd, Comedy Castle in Royal Oak, Michigan. And May 15th to the 17th at Gotham Comedy Club in New York City. Thanks, folks.
We take over one borough at a time. Secure our territory. Secure our turf. Because it's all our turf. Yeah!